chicken.
And the young prince said, "This is the most precious gift in the world."
All right, but you can't stay long.
We love stories!
It's time for the apple seed, filled with stories for you and your family. All kinds of tales from all kinds of tellers. I'm Sam Payne, your host. It's such a pleasure for me to be with you. And today, we'd bet dollar to donuts that you've heard stories like The Three Little Pigs and Rumpelstiltskin and A Christmas Carol. And stories like that have a thing in common. It's called the Rule of Three. The Rule of Three suggests that a trio of characters or events is more humorous or satisfying or effective than any other numbers. And in storytelling, it's used to emphasize an idea or set up a punchline or tell a story in a simple, catchy way. Usually the stories feature three siblings, the third being the smartest or most resourceful, as in the case of The Three Little Pigs, or three guesses, like in Rumpelstiltskin. And of course, Ebenezer Scrooge is visited by three spirits. And not only do today's stories also follow that rule of three, but fittingly, you'll hear three stories, including Molly and the Giant by storyteller Barbara Schutzgruber, and a story called The Most Precious Gift by Dan Kedding. But we're going to start with a story that was recorded live at the International Storytelling Center in Jonesboro, Tennessee. It's a story from a guy who's been called the Robin Williams of storytelling, Mr. Ed Stuyvesant. And this story follows the rule of three with its use of three magical objects. And although this tale may not be as prominent as The Three Little Pigs, you've likely heard of the protagonist, Jack. This is a Jack tale. It's called Jack and the Northwest Wind. It's from a collection of stories called Fool's Luck. And we're going to start with this story, Ed Stuyvesant on the Appleseed.
Speaking of North Carolina, that's where Jack and his mama lived, up on a mountain up in North Carolina. Now, you know what central air conditioning is. Jack and his mama had peripheral air conditioning. That's when you have holes in the side of your walls where the wind comes through. Now, in the summertime, when the northwest wind comes through, it keeps you cool. But in the wintertime, when that northwest wind comes blowing in from the northwest, it'd like to freeze your nose off. And every day, Jack's mama would say to Jack, "Jack, are you going to fix the holes in the wall today?" And every day, Jack would have another excuse. "Oh, Mama, can't fix the holes in the wall because Tom, my older brother, he took off all the planks when he went to Yale College. Or Will, my other brother, he took all the nails when he joined the Navy." He always had an excuse. Well, one day, Jack ran out of excuses. And so when his mama said, "Jack, are you going to fix the walls today?" Jack said, "No, Mama, I'm going to do something better than that. I'm going out and stop the northwest wind." "You can't stop the northwest wind, Jack." "Why, sure I can. All I got to do is find a hole in the ground northwest wind comes out of. I'll take my hat, shove it in the hole, stop the northwest wind." "You are a foolish boy, Jack." So Jack started out to stop the northwest wind. Well, he was passing by his grandfather's house. His grandfather, sitting there on the porch in his rocking chair, sees Jack.
"Jack, where you going?"
"I'm going out to stop northwest wind, Grandfather."
"You can't stop northwest wind, Jack."
"Why, sure I can. All I got to do is find a hole in the ground where the northwest wind comes out. I'll take my hat, shove it in the hole. I'll stop that northwest wind."
"You're a foolish boy, Jack. Come up here and sit beside me."
So he sat in a chair next to his grandfather. And after a while, his grandfather said,
"Now, Jack, I'm going to give you something. But you have to bring it right home to your mama. And don't stop at the house of the Rowdy Davis boys on the other side of the lane."
"Okay, Grandfather." His grandfather went into the house and brought out a tablecloth.
"This here is a magic tablecloth, Jack. Watch this."
Took the corners of the tablecloth, flapped it in the air. As soon as that tablecloth hit the ground, he said, "Spread, tablecloth, spread." All kinds of good food came out of that tablecloth. Nice roast chicken, chocolate cake, some biscuits, some milk. Well, they sat down to a sumptuous feast, and when they were finished, his grandfather grabbed the corners of that tablecloth. "Clean up, tablecloth." Cleaned itself up, folded it up, and gave it to Jack. Jack put it under his arm, headed down the road.
"Now, Jack, you don't stop at the house of the Rowdy Davis boys down the road."
"All right, Grandfather." Jack's walking down the road with that tablecloth under his arm. He's passing by the lane where the Rowdy Davis boys live, and they're out in the yard playing basketball. Jack loves to play basketball. He's watching them. After a while, the Rowdy Davis boys say, "Hey, Jack, come on in, play basketball with us."
"No, gotta get home to my mama."
"Chicken."
"Well, all right." He went into the yard, started playing basketball with the Rowdy Davis boys. After a while, they said,
"Hey, Jack, what's that thing you got on your arm?"
"Well, this thing here, it's a magic tablecloth."
"No way."
"Yes way."
"No way."
"Yes way."
"No way."
"Yes way."
"Prove it."
"All right, I will."
Took it, held it by the corners, Flapped it once. Spread, tablecloth spread, all kinds of good food popped out. Rowdy Davis boys and Jack sat down to a sumptuous feast. When they were finished, Jack took the corners of that tablecloth, cleaned up tablecloth, cleaned itself up, put it under his arm. The Rowdy Davis boys said, "Hey, Jack, our daddy's going to be home pretty soon. He'd love to see that magic tablecloth. Come on inside and sit a spell."
"No, got to get home to my mama."
"Chicken."
"Well, all right." Jack went inside and sat down on the couch. As soon as he sat down on the couch, he fell asleep. As soon as he was asleep, them Rowdy Davis boys snuck up on Jack, took that magic tablecloth, and replaced it with a regular tablecloth from Walmart. Next day, Jack got up and started home. His mama saw him from the top of the hill.
"Well, Jack, did you stop the northwest wind?"
"Oh, Mama, I didn't stop the northwest wind, but I got something better now. Watch this thing. It's a magic tablecloth. Spread, tablecloth, spread."
Nothing happened.
"Spread, tablecloth, spread."
Nothing happened.
"Spread, tablecloth, spread. Spread, tablecloth. Oh, this thing don't work anymore." He threw it down. His mama took that unmagic tablecloth and made Jack a nice shirt. Jack went to bed. In the morning, his mama said,
"Well, Jack, you going to fix the walls of the house?"
"No, Mama. I'm going out and stop the northwest wind."
"You can't stop northwest wind, Jack."
"Why, sure I can. All I got to do is find the hole in the ground. Northwest wind comes out. I'll take my hat, shove it in the hole, stop the northwest wind."
"You're a foolish boy, Jack."
Started down the road. Now, he knew he couldn't go past his grandfather's house because his grandfather would waylay him. So he went a little bit out of his way, went down through the main town street, the main street of the town. It was called Main Street. Oddly enough. And who should be coming out of the general store just at that moment? His grandfather.
"Where are you going, Jack?"
"I'm going out to stop northwest wind, Grandfather."
"You can't stop northwest wind, Jack."
"Oh, sure I can. All I can do is find the hole in the ground where the northwest wind comes out. I've taken my hat, shove it in the hole, stop northwest wind."
"You're a foolish boy, Jack. Come home with me."
Went home with his grandfather, and they're sitting on the porch again. His grandfather says,
"Now, Jack, I got another present for you. Stay right here."
Went inside, and he brought out a rooster.
"This here is a magic rooster, Jack. It lays golden eggs."
"No way, Grandfather. Roosters don't lay eggs." "Watch this.
Lay, rooster, lay."
And there in his grandfather's hand was a golden egg.
"Well, law me," said Jack. "I'll take that thing."
Took it, put it under his arm. His grandfather said,
"Now, Jack, don't stop at the house of the Rowdy Davis boys down the lane."
"All right, Grandfather."
He went down the road. He's passing the house of the Rowdy Davis boys. They're out in the yard playing football. Jack loves to play football. Stand there watching them. After a while, the Rowdy Davis boys say,
"Hey, Jack, come on in. Play football with us."
"No, got to get home to my mama."
"Chicken."
"Well, all right." He went and he started playing football with Rowdy Davis boys. After a while, they said to Jack,
"Hey, Jack, what's that thing you got under your arm?"
"Oh, this here, it's a magic rooster."
"No way."
"Yes, way."
"No way."
"Yes, way."
"No way."
"Yes, way."
"Prove it."
"All right, I will. Lay, rooster, lay."
There's a golden egg in Jack's hand.
"Oh, law me," said them Rowdy Davis boys. "You know, our daddy's coming home pretty soon. He'd love to see that magic rooster. Why don't you come on in the house and sit a spell?"
"No, got to get home to my mama."
"Chicken."
"Well, all right." He went inside, sat down on the couch. As soon as he was on that couch, he fell asleep. As soon as he was asleep, them Rowdy Davis boys snuck up on Jack, took that magic rooster out of his hands, and put a regular rooster in there from Walmart. Jack woke up the next morning. He started home. His mom was waiting for him at the top of the hill.
"Well, Jack, I see you didn't stop northwest wind yet."
"Oh, no, Mama, don't worry about northwest wind. I got something better now. This here is a magic rooster. Watch this thing. Lay, rooster, lay. Lay, rooster, lay. Lay, rooster, lay. Lay, rooster, lay. Lay, rooster, oh."
Rooster flew out of Jack's hands. He went to bed. Next morning, his mama said,
"Jack, you going to fix the holes in the wall today?"
"No, Mama, I'm going out to stop the northwest wind."
"You can't stop the northwest wind, Jack."
"Well, sure I can. All I got to do is find the hole in the ground. Northwest wind comes out. I'll take my hat, shove it in the hole, stop the northwest wind."
"You are a foolish boy, Jack."
Well, he knew he couldn't go past his grandfather's house. He knew he couldn't get down the main street of the town. So he went about 6 miles out of his way. He's going through a field. And who should be coming out of the woods, rabbit hunting, but his grandfather.
"Where are you going, Jack?"
"I'm going out to stop the northwest wind, Grandfather."
"You can't stop northwest wind, Jack."
"Why, sure I can. All I got to do is find that hole in the ground when northwest wind comes out. I'll take my hat, shove it in the hole, stop northwest wind."
"You're a foolish boy, Jack. Come home with me."
So So he went home with his grandfather. They're sitting on the porch. And after a while, his grandfather says, Jack, I'm going to give you another present. But you have to promise to take it right home to your mama. And don't stop at the house of the Rowdy Davis boys. Is it a magic present, grandfather? Sure is, son. Wait right here. He went inside. And he brought out the strangest looking club Jack had ever seen. It was all gnarly and roots sticking out of it. This here is a magic playaway club, Jack. Watch this. He aimed it at an ash tree in the middle of the yard. Playaway club, playaway. Thing fell out of his grandfather's hand, flew across the yard, hit that ash tree, knocked it down, began to chop, 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 wood for the fire, tinder, and kindling. Come back, playaway club. Playaway club came back to his grandfather's. I'll take that, said Jack. I'll take this thing home. No, Jack, don't stop at the house of the Rowdy Davis boys on the way. All right, grandfather. Jack started down the road, got to the house of the Rowdy Davis boys, and there they were playing baseball in the yard. Jack loves to play baseball. He's standing there watching him. Hey, Jack, come on in. Play baseball with us.
Nope, got to get home to my mama.
Chicken.
Well, all right. He went in. He started playing baseball with Rowdy Davis boys. Well, the game was kind of shortened because every time Jack got up with that playaway club, he hit the ball into the woods and they couldn't find it. After a while, they said, Hey, Jack, what's that thing you've been playing baseball with?
This here, oh, this is a magic playaway club.
No way.
Yes, way.
No way.
Yes, way.
No way.
Yes, way.
Prove it.
All right, I will. He aimed it at a dead oak tree in the middle of the yard.
Play away, club, play away.
Flew out of Jack's hands, hit that dead oak tree, knocked it down. Wop, 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 wop. Began to chop it into wood for the fireplace, tinder and kindling. Come back, play away, club. Came back to Jack.
Hey, Jack, our dad is coming home pretty soon. He'd love to see that magic play away, club. Why don't you come on in the house and set a spell?
No, got to get home to my mama.
Chicken.
Well, all right. Jack went inside, sat down on the couch. As soon as he sat down on the couch, fell asleep. As soon as he was asleep, then Rowdy Davis boy snuck up on Jack, took that magic playaway club, and replaced it with an aluminum baseball bat from Walmart. Well, just then, sure enough, the Rowdy Davis boy's daddy did come home.
Daddy, 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 where do you see this thing? It's more amazing than everything else. Watch this.
One of the Rowdy Davis boys took that playaway club, aimed at a big, big log by the side of the fireplace.
Playaway club, playaway.
Flew out of his hands and hit that big log and began to chop it into little toothpicks. Well, the sound of this woke Jack up. He looked around. He saw that he didn't have his playaway club. Saw that playaway club knocking that big log into toothpicks, and he yelled out,
Playaway club, playaway! Hit all the beams and joists in this house. Hit them Rowdy Davis boys up alongside the head.
Hey, Jack, get this thing off us.
You give my magic rooster back?
Yeah, we'll give you your magic rooster back.
Give my magic tablecloth?
Yeah, we'll give you magic tablecloth back.
Playaway club, come back.
Came back to Jack. He took that magic rooster. He took that magic tablecloth and headed home to his mama. There she was, standing at the top of the hill.
Well, Jack, I see you didn't stop the northwest wind.
Oh, don't worry about the northwest wind, Mama. Wait till you see this stuff.
So, took that tablecloth, spread, tablecloth spread. All kinds of good food popped out of it. Jack and his Mama sat down to a sumptuous feast. When they were finished, clean up, tablecloth, clean up. It cleaned itself up. Now, wouldn't you like to have a tablecloth like that? He took it and put it in the house. He came out again. He says, Mama, magic rooster, watch this thing.
Lay, rooster, lay.
Golden egg right there in Jack's hand. He put it down. He said, This is the best of all, Mama. Watch this thing.
Play away, club, play away.
Flew out of his hand and hit that big old dead maple tree in the middle of the yard. Knocked the maple tree down. Bonk! And then it began to plane planks off that maple tree. Zing, 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 zing. And took them planks and hammered them up against the holes in the wall. So those walls were all solid and cozy. Jack and his mama took one of them golden eggs down to the Sears and Roebuck store, traded it in for a central air conditioning, central heating unit. And they're warm in the wintertime and cool in the summertime. And last time I was up there with Jack and his mama, they were doing right well. And that's the story of Jack and the Northwest Wind.
Jack and the Northwest Wind, told for you by Ed Stuyvesant, recorded live at the International Storytelling Festival. Thank goodness for second and third chances. Otherwise, Jack may not have prevailed against the rowdy Davis boys. Now, up next, we're going to play the first part of a story from Barbara Schutzgruber. Barbara is unique in that not only does she weave fairy tales, but she also weaves jackets, often inspired by the fairy tale she tells. And not only does this next story contain three magical objects, but it also contains three siblings who quickly find themselves in a pickle when they cross paths with a giant. The story is based on an English fairy tale called Molly Whoopi, collected by Joseph Jacobs. And there's also a version called Maul Achillobane, collected by John Francis Campbell. You're going to enjoy this version of this story, Barbara Schutzgruber with Molly and the Giant, here on the Appleseed.
There once was a girl who lived with her family in the middle of nowhere. Her name was Molly, and she had two older sisters named Beth and Angela, and 10 little brothers and sisters. When Molly and the older girls got to be teenagers, their mama and daddy said, "Girls, you are old enough to go out into the world and seek your fortune. Here's your luggage. Here's your lunch. Go for it, girls. Send us a postcard after you find work." And off they went. Now, the family did live in the middle of nowhere, so it was going to take a while before Molly and her sisters got to the nearest town. Molly, Beth, and Angela were on an adventure. They talked and sang as they walked along. They picked flowers. They skipped stones in the rivers. They were having a wonderful time until the sky grew dark and it started to get cold. And then it started to rain. And before long, the girls were soaked to the bone. They were cold and wet and hungry, and they were not having fun. And then they realized they hadn't a clue as to where they were, or which way to town. They were lost. Beth and Angela were about ready to give up when Molly saw a distant light. "Hey, it's a house! Yes! Maybe they could stay there for the night, and in the morning find the path to town." But as they got closer, Beth and Angela began to have second thoughts. "Well, we can't just walk up to the house. Who would be living here, way out in the middle of no place, for sure? What if they were robbers? What if they were cutthroats? What if they were not nice people? Molly, you go. Peek in the window." "Okay." And she did. Well, what she saw was a woman standing at the fire, stirring a large pot of soup. And there was bread baking on the hearthstones, and it smelled so good. "Hey, it's okay. Come on." Molly knocked on the door. "Hi." "We're lost. We were headed into town to look for work, and we're kind of cold and wet and hungry, and we were wondering, you know, could we come in for just a little bit and maybe have something to eat and maybe dry off and maybe warm up by the fire and maybe sleep in your barn, and in the morning you could show us the way to town." Well, the woman looked at those three girls. "You can't stay here. Mm-mm. My man's a giant, and he eats humans. You girls had best be off before he gets home." But those girls did look so cold and wet and hungry, and they were drenched and dripping and looking pretty pathetic. "Oh, please, we won't stay long. Just long enough to warm up a bit and maybe have a bite to eat, please." "All right, but you can't stay long." The girls piled into the house. The soup and bread tasted so warm and good. They sat by the fire and began to warm up, and their clothes began to dry out. And just as they were about to leave, the ground shook. The door flew open, and there, standing in the doorway, was the biggest man they had ever seen. He was 7.5 feet tall. His shoulders filled the door frame. He had muscles upon muscles, and he was carrying an axe. Oh, I see we have company for dinner. And with that, the giant's wife walked right up to him and said, "Now you leave those girls alone. They were lost and wet and hungry, and they are leaving right now. You leave them be. You hear me?" But the giant just said, "Oh, no, 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 no. They cannot leave now. It's too dark. It's too cold. That storm is getting worse. No, they must stay the night. Oh, yes." Molly and her sisters just looked at each other. Right. How do you say no to a guy like this? Okay. And they agreed to stay. Now, the giant and his wife had 3 daughters of their own, and it was amazing just how much those girls had in common. They sat by the fire talking and laughing, and the giant sat at the table watching. The human girls were admiring the beautiful necklaces that the giant girls wore. They were made of spun gold and so silky and smooth. Well, the giant girl said, "Hey, no problem," and they braided a set of necklaces for Molly and her sisters out of straw and gave them as a gift. They all laughed, and the giant just sat in the corner, his chair leaning against the wall, watching, stroking his beard, smiling. Soon it was time for bed. Molly and her sisters climbed into the bed with the 3 giant girls, and when they blew out the light, the room was so dark you could not see your hand in front of your face. The 3 giant girls were asleep like that, snoring away. Beth and Angela were asleep in no time at all. Only Molly lay awake in the darkness. Something was bothering her. Something wasn't quite right, but she didn't know what it was. As she lay there in the dark, Molly fingered the braided straw necklace around her neck. It felt so rough and scratchy, not smooth and silky like the gold necklaces of the giant girls. And then Molly remembered the giant, sitting in the corner, watching, smiling. Quietly, without disturbing the others, Molly took the straw necklaces off herself and her sisters and switched them with the gold necklaces of the giant girls. And then she settled down to go to sleep. Just as she was starting to drift off, she heard the door open and close. Someone had entered the room. Molly lay still. She could not see a thing, but someone was in the room. And then she felt a giant hand on her throat. Molly didn't move. And when that hand felt the silky, smooth necklace, it moved on. That hand moved from girl to girl, passing over the 3 golden necklaces, and when it touched the rough, scratchy straw necklaces, that giant scooped up those girls, thinking they were the human ones. Yes, breakfast. Well, no sooner had that giant left the room when Molly woke up her sister, saying, "We have got to get out of here, like, right now!" And in a flash, they were out of that house. They were running as fast as they could. Then they heard the giant bellow. He had realized he had the wrong girls, and he was after them. Molly and her sisters ran, and the giant ran, and Molly and her sisters ran. The giant was gaining on them. The girls ran, their legs aching, their lungs burning. The giant was getting closer, 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 and just then the girls came to a screeching halt at the edge of a cliff overlooking a deep gorge. They were trapped, but down the way they saw a bridge, And it seemed, yes, they could get to it. They ran along the edge of that cliff. They got to the bridge, and it was so thin. It was called the Bridge of One Hair, and they got across. The giant was too large and heavy to cross that bridge after them. He stood on his side, and he yelled, "Oh, don't you ever come back here again!" And Molly just looked at that giant and said, "Well, you never know, do ya?" And off they went as the sun was coming up.
The first part of a story called Molly and the Giant from Barbara Schutzgruber. Molly and her sisters escape the clutches of a terrifying giant, but we promised you three magical objects, and they're in part two of the story coming up right after a break. I'm Sam Payne. Stick around.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us here on The Appleseed. Today's episode features stories that make use of the rule of three, this idea that stories are more humorous or satisfying or effective when they contain a trio of characters or objects or tasks. And before the break, you heard Ed Stuyvesant's rendition of Jack and the Northwest Wind, which contained three magical objects which Jack used to ultimately foil the rowdy Davis boys. And you also heard the first part of a story called Molly and the Giant. And when we last left Molly and her sisters, they were setting out to seek their fortunes. And after a brief but terrifying brush with a giant, they seemed to be out of harm's way. But we promised you three magical objects would come into play. So let's get back to it. Here's part two of Molly and the Giant by Barbara Schutzgruber here on The Appleseed.
Now, Molly and her sisters had escaped from the giant, but they were still lost. What to do next? And then they heard the sound of distant hunting horns, and over the hill came a group of riders. It was the queen of that land, out for her morning ride with all of her court. The queen pulled up her horse and looked down at the three girls, who were rather shabby-looking, yet wore beautiful spun-gold necklaces. And when she heard their story, she said, "Molly, you're a smart girl. You're a clever girl. You're a brave girl. Tell you what, you and your sisters can come stay at the palace." Such a deal. New clothes, the best food, parties every night, riding every day. This was the life. Things were good. Then, one night, the queen came and sat beside Molly and said, "Molly, you're a smart girl. You're a clever girl. You're a brave girl. Stories say that the giant has a magical sword that can cut through anything. Bring me that sword, and I will have the greatest army in all the lands. And your sister Beth can marry my oldest son. And as a wedding gift, I will give her this great chest of gold and silver coins." Well, Molly's sister, Beth, had gotten to know the oldest prince, and they really did kind of like each other. And she said, "Oh, come on, Molly, give it a shot." And Molly said, "Oh, okay, I'll try." And off she went back to the giant's house. Molly waited until the giant's family was gone and then entered the house. Where would a sword that could cut through anything be kept? She looked in the closets. She looked under the rug. She looked high and low. And at last she came to the giant's bedroom. And there, hanging on the wall above the giant's bed, right over his pillow, was the sword. It was longer than Molly's outstretched arms. It was held in a beautiful magical case that was stitched in gold thread. Molly was just about to reach up and take that sword off the hook when the giant came home, and shoo, under the bed she went. Molly lay there until at last the giant came up and climbed into bed, and the mattress sunk low, almost touching her, and Molly waited. And when she could tell by his breathing that he was asleep, Molly slipped out from under the bed, and slowly, carefully, she reached up right
over the head of the sleeping giant, slowly, carefully, stretching up onto her tiptoes, reaching, 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 right over the sleeping giant. She took hold of the sword and began to lift it off the hooks, slowly, carefully, and just as she got it off the hooks, it
hit the floor. The giant was awake and Molly was out that door. Molly ran and the giant ran and Molly ran. The sword was heavy and the giant was gaining on her, but Molly kept running, her legs aching, her lungs burning, the giant getting closer, 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 reaching out to grab her hair. And then she got to the bridge of one hair and do-do-do-do-do. She ran across. The giant stood on his side and yelled, "Ho, ho, don't you ever come back here again!" And Molly just looked at that giant and said, "Well, you never know, do ya?" And off she went to give the sword to the queen. Oh, the queen was pleased. There was a great banquet when Molly's oldest sister married the oldest prince. And at the wedding, the queen called her strongest soldiers before her, and each tried to pull that sword from its case, but none of them could. You see, that was a magical case, and it would only release the sword to that giant. No human would ever be able to use that sword. The queen did, however, hang that sword on the wall right behind her throne in the great council chamber for all to see. A few more weeks passed, and then one day the queen came and sat beside Molly and said again, "Molly, you're a smart girl, you're a clever girl, you're a brave girl. Stories say that the giant has a bag of magical diamonds. And if you hold one of those diamonds in your hand and make a wish, it will come true. Bring me the bag of wishes, and I will be the most powerful queen in all the lands. And your sister Angela can marry my second son, and as a wedding gift, I will give her this great chest filled with pearls, rubies, emeralds, all sorts of precious stones." Well, Molly's sister Angela had gotten to know the second prince, and they really did kind of like each other, and she said, "Oh, come on, Molly, give it a shot, okay?" And Molly said, "Well, okay, I'll try." And off she went to the giant's house. Molly waited once more until the giant's family was gone, and then entered the house. Where would a bag of magical diamonds be kept? She looked in the cupboards, she looked in the drawers, she moved loose stones around the hearth, she looked high and low, and at last she came to the giant's bedroom. And there, under the giant's pillow, was the bag of wishes. Molly was just about to take it when the house shook, the giant was home. Shoo! Under the bed she went. Molly lay there until at last the giant came up and climbed into bed. And the mattress sunk low, almost touching her, and Molly waited. And when she could tell by his breathing that he was asleep, Molly slipped out from under the bed, and slowly, carefully, she reached under the pillow, which was under the head of the sleeping giant. Slowly, carefully, she inched the bag right out from under the pillow, from under the head of the giant. Slowly, carefully, she slid that bag closer, closer, closer to the edge, and just as she got it to the edge of the bed, It hit the floor, and the giant was awake, and Molly was out that door. Molly ran, and the giant ran, and Molly ran, and the giant was furious. He ran faster and faster. Molly ran and ran, and the giant got closer and closer, reaching out to grab her just as she got to the bridge of one hair, and doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, she got across. The giant stood on his side and yelled, "Oh, don't you ever come back here again!" And Molly just looked back at that giant and said, "Well, you never know, do ya?" And off she went to give the bag of wishes to the queen. Oh, that queen was pleased. And that night there was another great banquet as Molly's second sister married the second prince. And at the wedding, the queen decided to use her first wish. She stood at the banquet table. The tall row of windows that overlooked the gardens were behind her. And just as she opened the bag, the first rays of the morning sun came through those windows, and when the sunlight touched the bag of wishes, all the diamonds disappeared. For you see, as is true in stories, magical things and daylight do not mix. A few more weeks passed, and then, again, the queen came and sat beside Molly once more and said, "Molly, you are a smart girl. You are a clever girl. You are a brave girl. Stories say that the giant wears on his hand a ring that can make you invisible. Bring me the giant's ring, and I will be the greatest queen in all the lands, and I will give you half my kingdom." Well, Molly knew a good deal when she heard it and said, "Okay, I'll try." And off she went, back to the giant's house. Molly waited once more until the giant's family was gone. And then she immediately went into the giant's bedroom and slipped under the bed. Molly lay there, and at last the giant came home and climbed into bed, and the mattress sunk low, almost touching her, and Molly waited. When she could tell by his breathing that he was asleep, Molly slipped out from under the bed, and slowly, carefully, she began to slip the ring right off the sleeping giant's hand. Slowly, carefully, she moved that ring. Slowly, carefully, the hours crept by as she inched that ring right off the giant's hand. Slowly, carefully, just as she got the ring, he grabbed her wrist and said, "I've got you now." Molly held tight to that ring, slipped it into her pocket as the giant dragged her down the stairs. "I'll show you, I'll show you. I'll take you out. I will throw you into that well, and you will drown." Now, Molly was a smart girl, a clever girl, and a brave girl, and she did think fast on her feet. And she said, Oh, thank you, thank you. Throwing me into the well, that's good, that's good. Okay, oh, whew. I was afraid that you were going to say that you were going to put me in a sack and hang me up in the top of a tree. It's okay, I can handle the well." The giant stopped and looked at her puzzled. "You want to be thrown into the well?" "Oh, I can't have that." "Oh, I know, I know. I'll seal you up in the wall and you'll starve to death." Molly said again, "Oh, thank you, thank you. Oh, that's okay. Seal me up into the wall. That's just fine. I was afraid you were going to, like, put me in a sack and hang me up in the top of a tree. I can handle being walled up. It's okay. It's okay. Just don't put me in a sack." The giant still looked at her puzzled. "You want to be sealed up in the wall? Well, No, no, I know. I'll put you in the fire and I'll roast you slowly. And Molly said yet again, oh, okay, for the fire. That's good, that's good. I can do the fire. I was afraid you were going to say that you were going to put me in a sack and hang me up on the top of a tree. I can handle being slow roasted, but please, please, please do not put me in a sack and hang me up in a tree. Now, I must tell you that in stories, giants are not known for being clever. The giant finally said, oh, I know. I'll put you in a sack and I'll hang you up at the top of a tree. No, not that, shrieked Molly. And the giant was very pleased with himself. He took a sack. He threw Molly in. He tied it up tight and he flung it high into the tree and set off to go about his day's work, leaving his wife and daughters to stand watch. And Molly waited. When she thought the giant was long gone, she called out, over the hill and far away, I see your sheep have gone astray. What's that, girl? What's that you? What are you saying up there? Called the giant's wife. Over the hill and far away, I see your sheep have gone astray. Molly called out a second time. Oh, darsh, said the wife. Come on, girls. Those sheep have escaped from the field again. We best collect them before your father gets home. And off the giant's wife and daughters went. Once they were gone, Molly quickly loosened the seam and slipped out of the bottom of that sack. She grabbed a couple of chickens and threw them up into the sack, and using a needle and thread from the house, Molly stitched up the bottom of that sack just as the giant was returning home. Molly slipped around the edge of the house and slowly was inching her way to the forest when the giant turned around, saw her, and off he ran. Molly ran, and the giant ran, and Molly ran, and the giant was enraged. He ran faster and faster, and Molly ran and ran, and the giant got closer, closer, closer. The ground trembled, and Molly fell. The giant gained, but she picked herself up and kept running. The giant was reaching out to grab her hair. She could feel the giant's hot breath on the back of her neck, and he was just about to grab her when she got to the bridge of one hair and doo-doo-doo-doo-doo got across. The giant stood on his side and yelled, oh, don't you ever come back here again! And Molly just looked back at that giant and said, well, you never know, do ya? And off she went to give that ring to the queen. Oh, the queen was pleased, yes. And that night there was a celebration the likes of which none had ever seen before. The queen sat on her throne, the giant sword behind her. She was dressed in her finest robes and jewels. All were silent as she stood and prepared to turn herself invisible. And then she realized she did not know the words to make the ring work. No human would ever be able to turn invisible with that ring. And so it was. The queen kept the ring, and she wore it around her neck on a gold necklace. All could see it. And as for Molly, well, she was given half that kingdom to rule, and she ruled it well. And she went on to have many other adventures.
Mm-hmm. Barbara Schutzgruber with a story called Molly and the Giant from a collection of stories called Still a Bit of Sugar, but Even More Spice. And we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with our third and final story for the day, a story from Dan Kedding. You won't want to miss it. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Before the break, you heard Molly and the Giant, told for you by Barbara Schutzgruber. It's fun to hear that version of that old story. There are so many stories out there that focus on three brothers. It was nice to hear one about three sisters. Now, to wrap up today's episode, we've got one more story featuring the rule of three. And once again, this one has three siblings and three magical objects. In this tale from storyteller, author, and musician Dan Kedding, a sultan declares that whoever brings him the most precious gift in the world can marry his daughter. And as you probably guessed, that's where the three brothers come into play. Here's Dan Kedding with his telling of a story called The Most Precious Gift. We're happy to bring it to you on The Appleseed. And as we leave you with this story, we remind you that you can find us online at byuradio.org/appleseed or Google The Appleseed Podcast and subscribe for something new just about every day here on the show. Here's Dan Kedding.
Once there was a sultan who had a beautiful daughter, a princess, and he made a declaration that no man could court his daughter unless he could give the sultan the most precious gift in the world. Well, kings and princes, dukes and sultans from all over the world came courting her. Some gave the sultan gold, and the sultan would say, "I have gold." Some would give him silver, and he would say, "I have silver." Some would give him fine horses, and he would say, "I have horses." Some would give him jewels and precious stones, and he would say, "I have jewels." And no one could give him the most precious gift in the world. And so for many years, the young princess went unwed. But there was a king who lived in the mountains, and he had three sons. And he called the three princes into his chambers one day and said, "My sons, I think it would be fitting if one of you married the sultan's daughter, and so I'm giving each of you 5,000 gold pieces. Go out into the world, my sons, and find the most precious gift. Buy it and bring it to the sultan, and one of you wed his daughter." And so the king gave his sons 5,000 gold pieces each, and the three princes mounted on their horses, and they sped away. And they came to a city way up in the mountains. And when they came into the town square, there was only three streets leaving that town square. The eldest got off his horse. He turned to his two brothers and said, "Let us begin our search here. I will go down the street that goes east." He turned to the middle brother and said, "You go down the street that goes west." And he turned to the youngest and said, "You go down the street that goes south." And so they left, each one searching for the most precious gift in the world. Now the oldest brother went down a street of mirrors, and every single shop sold nothing but mirrors. Oh, they were beautiful mirrors with ornate frames, but they were just mirrors. Nothing precious about mirrors. And he walked from shop to shop, from stall to stall, till he came to the very end of the street. And he walked into the last shop, and he picked up one mirror, and he picked up another, disappointed that he didn't find the gift he needed. Till a voice behind him said, "What do you want? What do you want?" He turned, and there was a little man, not very tall at all, with long hair and a long beard and a long black coat and a pointy hat. And he looked at the young man and said, "What do you want?" The young man said, "Well, I'm looking for the most precious gift in the world so I can marry the sultan's daughter." "Oh, well, I've got it in the back. Come in the back." "You have it in the back?" "Yeah, it's in the back. Come on, come on." And the little man took him in the back, and he handed him a plain mirror with a plain bronze frame. And the young prince said, "This is the most precious gift in the world?" "Yeah, it is. Pretty neat, huh?" "Well, it's just a mirror." "It's not just a mirror. Look into it and think about your father." And the young prince looked in the mirror, and it clouded over for a moment, and when the clouds fell away, there was his father sitting in his chamber reading a book. And the young prince looked at the little man and said, "This is indeed magic." "Oh, yes, it's a magic mirror. All you have to do is think about who you want to see, and you'll see them in that mirror." "Oh, this is wonderful. How much is this?" 5,000 gold pieces." "Oh, I just have enough," said the young man. And he handed the bag of gold to the little man, and he left to meet his brothers. Now, the second brother, he went down a street of carpet makers, and he walked from stall to stall, from shop to shop, but still, they were just carpets. Oh, they were beautiful, they were well made, but there was nothing precious about these carpets. Till he came to the last shop, and he was picking up one and looking at another, when he heard a voice behind him. "Oh, what do you want? What do you want?" He turned, and there was a little man standing there. He had long hair and a long beard and a black coat and a pointy hat. "What do you want?" "Well, you see, I'm looking for the most precious gift in the world. I'd like to marry the Sultan's daughter."
"Well, why didn't you say so? Come on in the back. I've got it in the back."
"You have the most precious gift in the world in the back?"
"It's in the back of the shop. Come on, come on, come on."
And he followed the little man in the back, and he took a rolled-up carpet, and he spread it out and said, "There it is, the most precious gift in the world." The young prince looked down and said, "That's a carpet. It's a plain red carpet. In fact, it's used. It's kind of worn out in spots. That's the most precious gift in the world. You don't believe me? Sit down on it." The young man sat down on the carpet, crossed his legs. "Now what?"
"Close your eyes."
The young man closed his eyes. "Think of your father." And he did. And when he opened his eyes, he was sitting in his father's room. And his father looked up from the book and said, "What are you doing here?" "Well, see, I was in the shop with this little man." And the minute he said "little man," he was back in the shop. And he looked up and he said, "This is..."
"Yes, it's a flying carpet, and it takes you wherever you want to go in the blink of an eye."
"How much is it?"
5,000 gold pieces.
"I've just enough," said the young man, and he handed the money to the little man, and he took his carpet and went to meet his brothers. Now, the youngest brother was not as fortunate as the other two. He went down a street where only fruits and vegetables were sold, and he went from stall to stall, from shop to shop, but all he saw were fruits and vegetables. Oh, they were very beautiful. They were very good, but nothing precious about these. And he came to the last stall, and he thought to himself, "This is just hopeless," when he heard,
"What do you want? What do you want?"
He turned, and there was a little man standing right in front of him. Long hair, a long beard, a long black coat, and a pointy hat. "Well, I'm looking for the most precious gift in the world, so I can court the Sultan's daughter."
"I've got it in the back. Come on."
"You do?
Come on, come on, come on."
And he followed the little man in the back. And the little man put his hand in a box and came out with a lemon. And he handed it to the prince. The prince looked down and said, "This is a lemon."
"I know, isn't that great?"
"This is the most precious gift in the world, this lemon?"
"Well, yes. It's a magic lemon. If someone is sick or dying, and you cut it in half and you squeeze out the juice and pour it down their throat, they'll be well in an instant."
"Oh, that's amazing," said the young man. "How much is it?"
5,000 gold pieces.
And so the prince took the money, handed it to the little man. He took his lemon, and he walked back to the town square to meet his brothers. And when he got there, the two said, "What did you get?" And he looked at them and said, "You tell me first." And the oldest one said, "I have a magic mirror. All I have to do is think about who I want to see, and I'll see them in their mirror." And the second one said, "I have a magic carpet, and it will take me wherever I want to go in the blink of an eye." "But what did you get?" The youngest brother said, "I got a lemon." And the other two said, "You got what?"
"I got a lemon.
It's a magic lemon. It'll cure any illness, any sickness, any disease."
"How do you know?"
"Well, I don't. I trusted him." They looked at him and said, "Well, at least we tried ours out first." "Oh, you are the youngest." Then the oldest said, "You know, I think I want to see what the princess looks like." And he held up his mirror and he thought of the princess, and it clouded over for an instant. And when the clouds faded away, there she was. But there was something wrong. She was lying in her bed, surrounded by doctors. Her father was kneeling at the foot of the bed, weeping. And the three of them looked at that image, and they said, "She's sick." And the youngest said, "I still have my lemon. Let's go cure her."
And the second one said, "Everyone on my carpet." And the three brothers sat on that carpet, and in an instant, they were in the princess's room. And the sultan said, "Who are you? How did you get into my palace?" "Never mind that now. We have something that can cure your daughter." And the youngest gave the lemon to one of the doctors. He cut it in half. He squeezed out the juice, and he poured it down her throat. And the fever faded away, and her eyes fluttered open. And the sultan said, "How did you know? How did you get here?" "Well, I have a magic mirror that showed me the princess was ill." And the second prince said, "And I have a magic carpet that took us here in the blink of an eye." And the youngest prince said, "And the lemon was mine, but now it's gone." And now the sultan had a problem of his own. Who deserved her hand in marriage? Each one had contributed to her getting better. The oldest one had seen that she was ill in the first place. The second one had brought them there in a blink of an eye before she could die. And the third one had the lemon that restored her to health. Who would get her hand? But before he could make up his mind, the princess made it up for him. For she came up behind him and said, "Father, the mirror and the carpet are indeed precious gifts. But the youngest prince gave me the most precious gift of all. He gave me the gift of life." And so it was decided, and the youngest prince married the sultan's daughter. And the other two brothers, they took their magic mirror and their magic carpet, and they had many adventures. But that's another story for another time.
Dan Kedding with the most precious gift here on the Appleseed. You can hear more of Dan Kedding's stories and songs by visiting his website, dankedding.com. Or, of course, you can visit our archive at byuradio.org/Appleseed. There's an archive there of all of the episodes of the show, more than 1,000 episodes and thousands of stories for your listening pleasure anytime you like. We always hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories, either from your life or from stories that you remember or things that you remember about the lives of the people that you love, stories that you can share around the kitchen table or the living room. That kind of storytelling can make for memories that last a lifetime. And you can tell us about it by emailing us at theappleseed@byu.edu. Again, that's theappleseed@byu.edu. We love to hear from you. This hour was written by our producer, Jeff Simpson, our audio engineer, Stuart Foster. I'm Sam Payne. Pleasure to have you with us today, and we'll see you next time on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by the Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.